Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coppin. Well, big week in the news. That's what we look at tonight. The week that was. So many great news stories. Last week, we kind of kicked around a new segment, the week that was, here on the Download. And we're going to keep it up tonight. Two esteemed professionals in studio with us to help us understand what this week will be remembered for. Martha Bain, she's the editor-in-chief of Belt Magazine, as well as a freelance journalist here in town, former editor at The Reader. Good to see you, Martha.
Good to see you, Justin.
And Eitan McKaylee. Hey, Eitan, how are you? Hey, good to see you. The author of The Defender, How the Legendary Black Newspaper Changed America, also a journalist here in town. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
All right. So, you know, like, to get the listeners up to speed, you're involved in this as well. 312-981-7200. Feel free to play along. You can text. You can call. We'll go through some categories, like what was the biggest story of the week? What was the most overreported? What was the most underreported? We'll also do winners and losers. What story sucked you down the old internet rabbit hole this week? And, of course, what story will we remember from this week in 50 years, 100 years, or 500 years from now when it's all in our heads, when it's all Google Glass, right? So why don't we start with the biggest story of the week. Eitan, why don't you kick us off? What do you think was the biggest story of this week?
Well, the biggest story overall has got to be the continuing implosion of the Republican nominee Donald Trump's political campaign for president. Yeah, I think so, because it's unprecedented to have this kind of a meltdown in a political campaign, just as it's unprecedented in a lot of ways for Trump to exist as a media-driven candidate in a Twitter-driven age, and I think everything there is fresh.
I felt last week was probably one of the worst weeks of his campaign. This week, he righted the ship in a way. He got rid of Paul Manafort. He changed up his staff. Today, you saw him in a very strong speech. If you know, a lot of people will find it to be somewhat controversial, saying, "African Americans, what do you have to lose? It's not going so well under the Democrats. Why don't you come over here?" His ratings among African Americans is probably the lowest in the history of low. So it's surprising that he would spend that much time trying to court a minority community that shows no interest.
Well, he did two things this week, okay? One of them kind of more in the direction of where he had been going, hiring Steve Bannon from Breitbart News, the alt-right website that some would describe as a prevarication-based website. But he also hired Kellyanne Conway, who's a hyper-competent pollster with a lot of experience and the first woman to run a GOP presidential campaign. So she's formidable. And the apology kind of that from Trump yesterday, the appeal to African Americans, which is really an appeal to white voters saying, "I'm not that racist." That's Kellyanne. And that needs to be
interesting. Yeah, I guess I didn't even think about that. But the new campaign staff, you're going to see a different tone from Donald Trump.
Yeah, except it's completely schizophrenic because he's hiring Steve Bannon on one hand and also trying to court the very, very small percentage of African-American voters who might actually vaguely consider voting for him. But hiring Steve Bannon, to me, I mean, that was my big story of the week, too. It's just hands down. It's sending such a clear message about what direction the campaign is going to take from now on. He's really saying to the base, to the Republican old-liners, that, you know what, sorry, guys, but you're stuck with me, and now I'm going to go in this direction with these crazy kids and racists and whatever.
I'll play devil's advocate only in the sense that, you know, he's been so he's said such bad things over the last month. I mean, just the things where you're just like, I can't believe, not even a presidential candidate, anyone who has a microphone in their face is saying it. And in the last 2 days, I've seen him take a different tone.
Yeah.
Where he came out and he said, "Listen, I make a lot of mistakes when I talk. You know, at least I tell the truth and I make mistakes. Hillary Clinton doesn't." All right. Blah, blah, blah. And then on the second end, this idea of like appealing to the African-American community, saying, "What do you got to lose?" you know, there might be some truth in there, as African American community has seen better days when
it
comes to
strategy,
political. Yeah, well, I don't think he's going to get the votes, but it might appeal in some way that he is not as bad of a guy as everybody thinks.
It's always Jim Edgar, the former governor of Illinois, once told me, essentially, I'm going to paraphrase, but he said basically, if you aren't racist and ask for African American votes, you can get 20% of the African American electorate. And maybe more than that, communicate to a broader, more tolerant white electorate that doesn't want you to be racist. So both of those are kind of wins. And I think you know, Trump has to be considered formidable. He did win the GOP nomination. He is a master of the Twitterverse. I mean, he knows what he's doing in a kind of modern media environment. So I wouldn't write him off yet, but I totally agree with Martha. Schizophrenic.
Okay, yeah. So my choice for the biggest story, because Trump is just, I can't do it anymore. The move to fire 7 police officers involved in Laquan McDonald's shooting and cover-up, I think is a big move, because that to me is the biggest story in my mind, because I feel like it shows a vast departure for the Chicago Police Department, or at least what we can expect from the police departments moving forward.
There's so much going on there, too. It's a move that wouldn't have been done even a couple of years ago. It's seems to have been greeted with a lot of enthusiasm from the city at large. And it also seems to be like there are others in the works, right? There are other cases that are now being brought up in which the lame duck IPRA is trying to
do something, which is strange. And then the whole Paul McNeil thing, which they just released the autopsy results.
Paul O'Neill, like, the kid
yesterday?
Who was on. Yeah.
The autopsy results came out yesterday. Right. So confirming what everybody already knew, but that he was shot in the back. And I thought I was thinking that it was an interesting week for the police department, but I felt like that was didn't kind of release to general silence.
Yeah, maybe
like there was not a lot of.
It's
maybe
so
I'm
true,
over,
and I wonder if I'm we got to take a break, but I wonder if there's something to that now that the public can get at the videos and we get to see it ourselves. That when autopsy reports or something else comes out that's after the fact that we've already seen with our own eyes, people aren't as interested in following up on a story.
But it does signal. It signals in the context of the Laquan McDonald officers, I think that it signals that there's going to be more to hear about in that case as well.
Martha Bain, Eitan McKaylee, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll do a little bit more. We got to do what was the overreported, underreported, and winners and losers coming up here. 312-981-7200 if you want to get into the mix. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download. Justin Kaufman, Eitan McKaylee, Martha Bain in studio. We're doing the week that was, sort of going through the categories of biggest story, overreported, underreported. What was a story that you really got sucked down the rabbit hole on? That can happen a lot on Facebook, Twitter. And also, which story will be remembered from this week in 50 years, 100 years, 500 years from now? All right, so let's go to the overreported. Overreported story this week. Martha, what do you think?
Ryan Lochte. I'm so tired of Ryan Lochte. I mean,
he had to come up, right?
It's a great story. I mean, the Schadenfreude is irresistible.
Exactly.
But douchey bro acts like an idiot is not a story. It's just not a story. And so, and I also feel like he's, you know, obviously he feeds off of media attention and attention from anybody. So I feel like I just really sort of want his life to go be ruined quietly in private.
The problem I had with that story, I felt the same thing. I think we'll all have overreported Ryan Lochte. And, you know, the thought pieces and the societal breakdowns of why Ryan Lochte gets this coverage and somebody else gets this coverage and white privilege, that's what made my head hurt, only because I'm like, this is all off a dumb swimmer. Like, I just felt at the end of the day like there was so much conscious discussion, robust thought pieces that were happening in this country for 2 days about the coverage of Ryan Lochte that I was just like, at the end of the day, it's a swimmer who kicked in a door.
Well, the one piece I was going to say that is important about this story is that Brazil, for all of its being maligned before the Olympics, performed pretty well, apparently, in creating an Olympic environment that was secure and safe and in which athletics happened without a whole lot of problems, actually without a lot of the doping that had taken place in a lot of prior Olympics. So they deserve some credit. And if they were a little thin-skinned, let's say, about this particular incident,
you can understand why.
I mean,
the lead-up to the Olympics was like, everyone's going to get mugged.
Right.
Yeah. Everyone's going to get Zika.
Right.
Right.
And the favelas, apparently, like crime in the favelas surged. The gangs in the favelas took advantage, full advantage of the absence
of
police.
Tourists.
Yeah.
The popular tourists.
Right.
I was going to push back a little bit on that, because the other story from the Olympics that that I was kind of following was the Gabby Douglas story. And here you have
another
this,
one that's just like,
you know, it's like
America.
And exactly. It's like, come on, America. So the contrast between the treatment of Ryan Lochte, who was saying like, boys will be boys. Give him a break. He worked really hard. And then all these people just putting the hammer down on poor Gabby Douglas for doing nothing but being black.
I got to say, it's this weird,
not friendly enough.
This weird Twitter fringe world we live in now, where anyone can say anything and then a newspaper can pull that out and put it in an article. It drives me crazy. It drives me crazy because I don't know one person. I mean, I live a sheltered life. I have friends. No one has a problem with Gabby Douglas putting her hand over her heart. Nobody has a problem with that. And the idea that the media has made it to, that everybody has a problem with it. It's just, I don't know. That kind of stuff is so overreported.
She is a kid.
She's a kid.
Ryan Lochte is 32 or
exactly.
something. I mean, she's a kid and she got bullied on a national stage and it was just heartbreaking.
It was heartbreaking.
It actually really broke my heart. So,
all right. So let's go to underreported. What do you got for underreported?
Well, underreported, I would say, is what's happening with Obamacare, which is especially in Illinois. Illinois is kind of
that's
a bellwether
good one,
for it.
That's a good
it.
One.
There's a lot happening in terms of the people who are using the Obamacare marketplace to get insurance. So we're talking about middle-class professionals, newspaper people, writers, folks like that, who need to buy healthcare and have money to buy healthcare because lower-income people have been brought into Medicare, right, and Medicaid. Mm-hmm. So these folks are increasingly facing obstacles not just to buy healthcare, but to get any kind of access to Northwestern, University of Chicago, with like the closure of Land of Lincoln.
I am one of those people. I am
happening?
A Land of Lincoln insurance
Tell me
holder.
What's happening. I don't understand.
It's a nightmare.
So tell me the tell.
I'm actually in denial about the whole thing.
So if you're a middle income person, you buy healthcare and you don't get healthcare through your employer. You get healthcare through the marketplace.
Right, right.
You have a wide variety of choices, but those choices only include certain hospitals, certain doctors, certain groups of folks. A few years ago, you could get a Blue Cross Blue Shield plan. You could get a couple of other plans that accessed all the hospitals, including the premium hospitals.
Mm-hmm. So
including Rush, including Northwestern, including...
So the insurance companies over time have said, that's not worth our time. We're removing ourselves from the public Obamacare, quote-unquote.
Or the hospitals have removed themselves.
Right.
They say, we're not going to deal with Blue Cross anymore.
And there's nothing that the American government can do about it.
Well, there is. The insurance regulators of each state have the authority to negotiate with all sides here. But in Illinois, and like many states that have Republican governors who appoint the regulators, you find that the regulators are not particularly aggressive in negotiating with any of the healthcare entities. So what's happened now is that with the closure of Land of Lincoln a couple of months ago, there's really no way for you as an independent person buying on the exchange to get to Northwestern or University of Chicago. If those were your doctors, you're out of luck.
That's amazing. That's a good one. That's one that I've seen because it was Aetna.
Aetna.
Who
I had Aetna before Land of Lincoln.
Yeah, I mean,
I've just been on this wheel for a long time.
They're doing the same thing. Go ahead.
Sorry, it's really really frustrating. I mean, even during the brief window, I only joined Land of Lincoln in January, and during that brief window, I only was able to use my insurance once, and that was at an emergency walk-in clinic that happened to take it. But I was unable to find a primary care physician in my network who wasn't in the far south suburbs who was taking patients. You know, luckily I'm a relatively healthy person, but I know I have other friends who have like chronic health conditions who are also in Land of Lincoln and are really suffering right now.
Yeah,
I mean, it's really
you're talking about over 100,000 people in the state of Illinois. And you have similar situations in states all over the country. Is there going to be a political cost for Democrats? Mm-hmm. I mean, there could be. I think the greater problem, though, is that it has ramifications throughout the economy. Again, these are all independent professionals, really. These are people who, if they can't get health care while they're running a magazine or something like that, they may end up taking a job somewhere and not doing
well,
that.
It defeats the purpose that that they put the affordable care together
It limits creativity. It limits entrepreneurial development. It really limits economic development over hundreds of thousands of people in the country.
Eitan McKaylee, Martha Bain in studio. Let's take a quick break. We'll get an update on tonight's news. We'll come back. We'll do Martha's underreported and we'll pick it back up. 312-981-7200. If you're on the line, stay on. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me tonight, Martha Bain. She's the editor-in-chief of Belt Magazine, also a freelance journalist here in town, as well as a former editor of the Chicago Reader.
Correct.
Royalty.
10 years ago.
I know, but still, it's
royalty.
I can't believe it's been almost 10 years. Eitan McKaylee is the author of The Defender, How the Legendary Black Newspaper Changed America. He was a guest on the program here, and also he is also a journalist in town. We're talking about the week that was. Let's go to Steve, just because Steve's been holding on the line through the break. He wants to talk about our underreported story, which was the Affordable Care Act and how insurance companies are bailing on the Affordable Care Act. Steve, what's your experience?
Yeah, well, you know, I tell you, I just want to get everybody off the confusion train because, Martha, I'm with that Land of Lincoln, too, and I was told it was all over September 1st, okay? Then I call there and find out, no, they're not over until September 28th, okay? And then I'm told that if you're already with them, you stay with them and you don't have to worry about anything. Bottom line is it's all over September 28th.
Oh, yeah. See, that's part of the problem is the confusion around all these plans and so forth. And so, yeah, I agree,
Steve. Yeah, well, I used to have Blue Cross Blue Shield, but then, like Martha says, my doctors don't take this, don't take that, don't take this. So I found this thing. And now, you know, I have Medicare coming in November. So I only have to find insurance for 1 month.
Right.
Yeah, but it's a big headache.
It's a big headache.
Yeah.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for that. That sums it up. I think you're right, Eitan. There is a lot of headaches and a lot of confusion around.
And their messaging is not consistent. It's been very confusing. I thought I had until the end of the year. I could be a poor not reading my mail anymore. But
it's the way that it works is that because Land of Lincoln is being shuttered. You have the option of not having health insurance for 2 months or 3 months, October, November, December.
So, yes.
For 3 months, you may not have health insurance. You will still have to pay the tax penalty, but something else.
This is a segment that I need to get some people in here and do 2 hours on. Let's move on right now. Yeah. I hadn't got to your underreported story, Martha. What do you think's underreported this week?
So this question, when I started thinking about it, this sent me down a rabbit hole because because this whole question of like what is underreported these days. To this week, for example, you heard a lot of people saying that they didn't think that anybody was that no one was covering the flooding in Baton Rouge. The media is a media blackout. Nobody's covering the flooding in Baton Rouge. What's going on? You know, what's wrong with the national media, et cetera, et cetera. And then I kind of got, somebody on Facebook somewhere was like, well, actually, here's this story. It was a journalist. Somebody at The Guardian was like, here are the stories that The Guardian has done. And I just started thinking about that and I actually kind of got off track about like, what is it that makes a story underreported? How do you quantify if a story is actually underreported or if it's just attended to.
Yeah, right.
And you can say that about, any number of other things. I mean, you can say it about Bernie Sanders. You can say it about, in Chicago, the big one is Home and Square. Like, that's a whole,
The West Side police facility,
And Freedom Square.
Yes, I had a long conversation with somebody about that who was trying to, arguing that it deserved to be covered more. And I was like,
I agree on that. That's
I do, too.
Strange
I think,
that there's a protest
I think,
that's
but it's
been...
not a breaking news story. And this is, I mean, I'm not a breaking news person, but I kind of weirdly understand the logic of why it's not being covered like in an aggressive way, because it's a larger, like long arc story about kind of the contemporary civil rights movement. And about police brutality in Chicago in general, which is a very long Park story.
Maybe we could change it to like under-trending.
Under-trending stories, exactly. So all of which is to say, this is a huge sort of epistemological question for me. But my underreported story of the week, for lack of anything better, was the story that the state of Flint is no longer in a state of emergency. The city of Flint is no longer in a state of emergency. And what does that mean?
That's
because that because nobody cares about Flint. I care about Flint because we just published a book about Flint. And I've been to Flint and I know some writers there. And I think the story is fascinating. It has huge regional ramifications. There is lead in Chicago. There is just a huge story that came out a couple days ago about lead levels in East Chicago in Indiana. There's lead in Baltimore. There's lead in Cleveland. This is a huge
it's also
story.
It's a nightmare scenario for America.
It's so not sexy.
Yeah.
Because it's not, there's no good visuals. You can only show so many photographs of glasses of dirty water and corroded pipes before people just zone out. I mean, then there's just, and there's no clear villains. I mean, the villain is the system. The villain is post-industrialization.
Well, you know, like, it's funny because doesn't it, at the same time, it's, you know, the concept that news organizations are run by how many people are going to read their stuff. That's how you're seeing how even the Tribune Company is a digital company now. So the way that they're going to measure, so if they cover Flint and they do it every day and then they start to see the numbers of people click out or that click through, go down and go down and go down, they move on. And it's an interesting, weird kind of cyclical nightmare that we've created in our own, you know, the way that we consume news, that, you know, the reason it's underreported is because a lot of people don't want to click on it.
Right. And the Flint story was underreported when it was first breaking. And then there was sort of a couple month long window where all of a sudden everybody parachuted into Flint and wrote their stories and then left. And now with this sort of the formal state of emergency lifted, which essentially means that they no longer get federal funding for bottled water or for and all the other sort of mitigating strategies that have been put in place. It's actually not a good thing.
Mm-hmm. It makes it seem a headline that you're like, really, hey, all right,
thing.
They're out of
it. It means the state's going to have to pay for all that now. Yeah.
And Michigan doesn't have any money. So anyway, so that was my...
That's a good one.
That's my...
All right, so let's move on to winners and losers. Who do you got eights on for winners?
Well, winners, I have to say, the police superintendent, Eddie Johnson, has done a great job and is winning all sorts of I think, accolades for trying, if for nothing else. Strangely, I have to also at the same moment put Rahm Emanuel, the mayor, on the loser list.
Right.
And it's strange because Mayor Emanuel, you know, when this all broke with Laquan McDonald, he basically told the public, look, I've got a long time to fix this. I've got 4 years until the next election, and I'm going to take some time and do this properly. And he is... You can't give him a lot of credit for the way that he ran the police department in his first term, but now he is following that plan. And you do see big changes, big shakeups, big
overhauls or moves. Yeah.
Yeah. And you see other things happening similarly, like the Chicago Housing Authority has got a dynamic new leader, Chairman Jones, who's doing a great job. And
there's
also
some things that are happening in the city, and you could call winner to the department heads, but it's interesting, loser to the mayor. One of the reasons to say loser to the mayor is because he came out this week when pressed on the issue and said, "Oh, you know, there's a firewall between me and the superintendent. Look at the history of Chicago.
Yeah.
It's not my area. He makes the call." And so you're like, "Well, are you taking credit or not taking credit? To make it seem like he has nothing to do with the police at this point just seems to be he's again on the wrong side where Eddie Johnson's making these moves. He could have aligned himself with him and been like, you know, they both kind of sort of like we're making a change. But he, in a weird way, just kind of steps away.
And somehow I think the trust is broken and people are just not willing to give him any credit for even when he – I mean, look, the guy didn't have any executive experience. Well, he was chief of staff at the White House, but he didn't get rave reviews. He wasn't there for very long. He came to run the city of Chicago with no experience as the chief executive of a large city or a large government entity. He – did not do great in his first term, but you know, you got to give somebody some time to learn the ropes. He may be doing that now. It just doesn't seem like the citizenry is going to give him the chance to do that.
To do that. Okay, Martha, what do you got for winners and losers?
For my winner, that was a hard time coming up with winners, actually. my winner was Mother Jones,
okay.
The magazine,
oh, nice.
Because they are reaping the benefit of this huge story that they published 4 months ago about private prisons. And this announcement
Absolutely,
yesterday
yep.
that the federal right. government was going to sort of disengage itself from its contracts with the private prisons is really seems to be directly tied to
Mother Jones.
A lot of the reporting that they did in this
yeah.
huge 4 month long undercover investigation. It's a phenomenal story that people should read. And people should support independent journalism and all these other
yeah.
things. So they're having a little bit of a moment in the sun that is very, very rare for small nonprofit
That's great.
Independent news magazines.
And what yeah. about on the loser side? More
oh,
losers.
So many losers.
We need sound effects. We need like losers. Now it's time for the losers. Yeah. Making like talk soup in
Gawker.
Here.
Gawker.
You know? Yeah. That's an I had Gawker. Yeah.
Gawker. Gawker's a good one.
Gawker. Poor Gawker. And again, like I feel I've never been a huge Gawker fan, but it's chilling. The whole Gawker story is pretty chilling that a billionaire with a grudge can take down a multi-billion-dollar multi-platform media
company. That's the future.
Boom.
Yeah.
It's over.
And and that story is a chill. You're right.
Chilling
is the right word
yeah.
because for what you will with Gawker, they were a media empire. They have 5 or 6 websites, which will continue,
like
Deadspin, the Jezebels, the Gizmodos. But Gawker, you know, was really the poster child for a new digital media company.
Right.
They know it. All you old timers up in the ivory towers, you don't get it. Gawker gets it. And then Gawker is undone by its own sort of hipness
mm-hmm.
in the way of, you know, publishing.
But it's undone in a very old school way.
Yeah.
By a guy with a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's. I was just listening to a report about news stations, television stations, local television stations in Florida, and how upset they are with the way that the Trump campaign and the associated Republican PACs have not been spending money this summer on the presidential campaign.
Oh, interesting.
And it was really occurring to me, like, how much our media landscape is shifting. I mean, if you take out medical ads, pharmaceutical ads, especially Cialis and Viagra ads, and political ads, does television just collapse? Do we end up with like no major networks anymore?
I'll tell you. I mean, it's a big deal. I mean, when campaign season comes around, especially a presidential season, that's a payday for most media companies, because that's why. I mean, they just run those things. We act like, you know, oh, gosh, these candidates. But the media has something to do with it, too. They're like, keep bringing it. Keep bringing it. We love it.
Yeah.
Eitan McKaylee, Martha Bain, my guest tonight in the week that was. 312-981-7200. We'll come back. We will do the rabbit hole story and also what we can remember from this week and 5,100, 500 years from now. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're doing the week that was. 312-981-7200. Eitan McKaylee and Martha Bain in studio. We're doing winners and losers. We're about to move on to what story sucked you down the rabbit hole this week. I'll throw in a couple I've got here that I thought were interesting. Back to the overreported. I thought that the Cubs DJ getting fired for playing the Prodigy while Aroldis Chapman came to the mound was an overreported story. This is, of course, a story where that song, certain song from 1999, Smack My B Up, was played when Aroldis Chapman, who was suspended for 30 games for domestic violence at the beginning of the season, came to the mound. There was someone noticed it. Someone put it on Twitter. It blew up. It was a big story. ESPN had it. It took 10 seconds for the Cubs to be like, that DJ is fired. There's no place for that in Cubs organization. What's not told about that story, which I think is the way that media works today, is it was part of a package that they put on the scoreboard and they show clips. It had nothing to do. The DJ didn't cue it up to play when Aroldis Chapman walked on the field. They've been playing it for 4 months. at Wrigley Field. They've been playing it as part of a bat. Like, it didn't matter, but because they went and hired a guy with a domestic violence background, now it means something. And then that's why he – and the Cubs would say, well, he shouldn't have put it in that song in a montage anyway. Mm. I just thought it was, again, simplifying a story that I feel bad for the DJ who didn't go out of his way to embarrass the Cubs or embarrass Aroldis Chapman and was thrown out of the, under the bus by a corporate baseball team that wants nothing to do with controversy.
I mean, he wasn't sending a message or anything. He was just picking some music.
He picked music 3 months ago before the guy was on the team. So it's not he's not making a statement. Yeah. He's not doing anything, and it just felt like we in the media were all like, look at he, you know, they wanted it to be like Wild Thing, like Charlie Sheen coming out of the bullpen, and this DJ's like, watch this, let me change the CD, everyone's gonna love this, press play. That's not what it was, and they made it to be that way, and the Cubs fired him for it, and he's out, and it kind of goes to show you about how the media can sort of spin a story.
Well, the only thing that surprises me is that it took a couple of months to track the song.
Nobody cared.
That's probably what the reality is, right? But you're in this age where access means that everything is going to be recognized and traced and measured according to some ethical standard. And when it comes to baseball, I mean, baseball was not historically a, you know, what we call a G or a PG rated
activity. It's not a PC sport.
No.
But see, I would push back a little bit because I just went to Wrigley Field for a game just yesterday. The songs that are played when the players come to bat, the songs that are played under the, you know, the Connie's Pizza ad when the on the between innings, the song that's played when they hit home runs, Whoop There It Is off the Jock Jams. Watch the video for Whoop There It Is. It's a lot of jiggling butts. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of songs that are played at ballparks have different meanings outside the ballpark. And for me, that song, if you're familiar with Prodigy from the late 90s, which nobody is, it's an instrumental. And so it's a popular kind of instrumental that's played. You would be surprised how many times that song is played, the instrumental part, on commercials, on you know, popular TV, music, all this kind of stuff. It's a very popular instrumental. You'd recognize it. He's not playing the lyric part of it that everyone knows the song by. That in that package, it was just the instrumental. And so I agree with you, but I also feel like if you're going to go there, then it's like they hit a home run and they play Pat Benatar's "Hit Me With Your Best Shot." You know what? That's no good. You can't do it. That means something.
I mean, you know, rock and roll. If you're starting to really analyze it, you're going to leave a very small percentage that's acceptable in terms of.
Girl, can't we get much better? It's going to be a lot of edited songs at the ballpark, right?
Yeah, there won't really be much left, you know.
So I thought that was interesting. I also thought that the story that nobody talked about, sort of an underreported or nobody talked about story. National Public Radio, NPR.org, the site that's a news site, they made a big decision this week to cut comments. They're going to eliminate comments from their site, which used to be a big discourse, a place for people to react and talk about the stuff that was on their programs. And they've determined that I think the word was that it's lost its use, that it's lost its value, that there's a point in which it just becomes divisive and there's not much to be taken out of it.
I actually didn't know that NPR had done that, but they're following a growing trend of accelerating snowball. I mean, it seems like that's becoming more and more common. Is there, are people upset about this?
I think they are because NPR has a, you know, as a loyal following, and the loyal following is a very, I guess, well-read community. And a community that has thoughts, it's not unlike you'll see with the Atlantic or other places where there's going to be some insightful conversation around the pieces that were aired, the stories, that the research, the investigations. And in this case, you know, they finally determined that wasn't happening. And what there was the use for was to have this sort of robust conversation about the communities that were being talked about in the piece or what have you, and it just turned out not unlike everything else on the internet, just devolving into garbage.
Well, that's you know, there's a through line through this conversation tonight, right? We've been talking about shifts in the media landscape, and you've got something now where the whole anonymity of the internet, which is, you know, this fundamental rights that people feel they have when it comes to the internet, but it doesn't really work. It's hard enough to like keep people civil on Facebook, where you are more or less known and identified, but where people are anonymous, it devolves so quickly into the most racist, insulting, mean-spirited conversation. I don't know anybody in their right mind who wants to participate in a you know newspaper conversation.
It is gravitated to the it's almost migrated to Facebook if the Tribune puts something up and says.
I was wondering if there's a non. If there's actually just a practical business reason for doing it on that level, and that the conversation has moved to Facebook or Twitter or what have you. You post a story on Facebook, everybody comments in that thread in your own personal echo chamber.
I will say this. The one thing that is interesting is if you think about the business model, newspapers are recognizing that more and more people are probably gravitating to Facebook for that conversation, and Facebook's getting those clicks, not the newspapers.
Yeah.
And so the newspapers realize that it's money to curate, it's money to edit, it's money to make sure that nobody's saying vile things on your website, and they want to just eliminate it. It's just another job that's being taken away.
I also wonder if a lot of sites have put in tried to implement strategies to kind of weed out the trolls. Mm-hmm. Where you make commenters register, you make them jump through X, Y, and Z hoop before they can actually post their comment. But what that does is weed out the people in the middle and leave only the extremists who are really motivated to go create their account so they can say their piece on the comment of the story, and it just pushes the conversation to the fringes. And the person was like, "I had a thought. But I'm going to go do something else." They're like, they're gone.
I would let nobody know my thought because I don't want it to be ripped apart.
No one would know my thought. So.
Martha Bain, Eitan McKaley, let's take a quick break. We'll get an update on tonight's news. We'll come back. We'll wrap it up. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob Martyr. It's Justin Kaufman. It's a Download 720 WGN Chicago. We're doing the week that was here on the Download Friday nights throughout the summer. Martha Bain, the editor-in-chief of Belt Magazine, as well as a freelance journalist and the former editor of the Chicago Reader's in studio with us. Eitan McKaley is the author of The Defender, How the Legendary Black Newspaper Changed America. Great book. We had a good conversation. You can find it if you Google WGN, Eitan, Defender.
The call comes up.
I only think in Google search terms.
Oh, man.
Like, I don't give URLs. I just give Google search terms.
Figure it out yourself.
Figure it out.
I appreciate it. I could see sales go up on the night of the show, so.
Or at least search terms go up.
I get the Amazon sales, so I could see.
Oh, you see the sales. Look at that. Yeah. Huh? Well, it's a good book.
Power of the media.
All right. So, we left with winners and losers, and we did over and under. So let's do what story sucked you down the rabbit hole this week. The internet is changing the way we even read the news. Obviously, so many things that are shared and thrown at us. And then also at the same time, to so many, follow-up stories and clicks. And I mean, Donald Trump's a great example of, it seems like every third post on social media is about Donald Trump. Eitan, what story took you down the rabbit hole this week?
Well, even though there was some progress on the police front, violence in Chicago is still out of control. There's something that has changed in the city, in the low-income African-American neighborhoods of the city, where gunfire is. I have an ongoing conversation with some of our mutual friends, Steve Rhodes and folks like that, about whether it's worse or better than the 1990s or other periods of Chicago history. But all I can really say is that it's bad, and it feels horrible and hopeless in a lot of these neighborhoods. It really feels like the resources have just been sucked out, and there's just no hope for an entire generation of young people. And the result is horrible violence.
That's a rabbit hole too, because we had Sherry Runner from the Urban League on yesterday, and you really can see it as almost like an ecosystem of one block after another. I mean, you can go trace it all the way back to closing middle schools, to the point where you get to high school and kids are not graduating, so they don't have the resume when they go to get into colleges or to go into an office job situation. So now what do? So now you're out on the streets. You got to figure out a way. So you get into the illegal trade, drugs. Then there's protection involved in that, where you got to protect your money that's coming in. And that's where you find so many different young African-Americans dead. because of essentially a trickle down from all of society. It's really interesting.
I covered the police beat in the 1990s for the Chicago Defender. There were over 1,000 homicides a year in the city. But what was different was that they were everywhere. That I remember going, taking the bus, given that it was the reporter's pay in those days. But I took the bus on North Milwaukee Avenue, southeast on North Milwaukee Avenue, and went from homicide to homicide. Now, these are all neighborhoods where if there's one or two homicides a year in these neighborhoods now, it makes the news. But back then, it was a regular occurrence.
It was spread out.
So, right. So we're getting a kind of concentrated type of violence. What sucked me down the rabbit hole was trying to figure out how to address it and what to even recommend to people, what to say on this show about what people should be doing or how they should be thinking about it.
Martha, what do you have for rabbit hole story?
Well, I just wanted to speak to that just for a second, because it goes back to this question of underreported stories. Which is just a little anecdote. Like earlier this week, I was in Englewood doing a freelance job, reporting on a little story at a church on 74th Street. And I was talking to the pastor there. And he was like, I refuse to listen to the mainstream media. I refuse to read the mainstream media. The mainstream media doesn't want to tell the story about what's actually going down here. All they want to talk about is guns. All they want to talk about is violence. They don't want to hear. They don't want to tell the story of all the things that we are trying to do to make the city better and to give our kids hope and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, he was preaching, and it was pretty moving, actually. And I think that that's another way that you can look at the story in terms of how the, again, like the police beat is the police beat. It's like shooting to shooting to shooting to shooting. And there aren't often the resources to really pull back and look at structural and long-term and historic inequities in a daily media context.
Eitan, let me ask you. I being someone who covered both of you, I mean, covered Chicago at a different time, different decade. Does some of it have to do essentially the same? We talk about through lines in the segment. Does it have to do with the idea that, you know, the bleeds, it leads. And we've seen that with the 10 o'clock news. And we've seen newspapers get into this business because when they write a story that says 11 shot, 58 wounded, the click rate on that makes it the most popular story of the week. And so they realize that people want that. So they continue to give us that. It's a raised awareness about the issue of violence in Chicago, but it hasn't actually... Is it representative of what's really happening?
And it is news. It's something that happened, whereas church offers youth program to underprivileged children is not news, that metric.
I think all that is going on. There's also a kind of hands kind of being thrown in the air, like, what do we do? How do we deal with this problem, given that we have all these kind of assumptions about what the problem is and what is going on in those neighborhoods? It becomes very difficult to do what Martha just suggested, which is look at all the assets in the neighborhood, look at all the resources, look at all the people trying, you know?
That is a strategy for kind of trying to address it.
Right.
I got a press release today, and it was something that I was thinking about. I'm like, well, we talked about it last night, Pete, the concept that there is a parade tomorrow in Englewood that is a well-known back-to-school parade. It's not the Bug Billiken parade. It's a secondary one, but it's been going on for years. I read this whole story about this parade, and first time in my time, and I've worked in media for 20 years that I knew about the parade.
Never heard of it.
You know, and it's a second, and it's really about Englewood Pride, and they will say from the organizers say, we want the kids to know they have an alternative. We want to get them ready for school. That's not just about violence. But like you said, Martha, it doesn't have, for news editors and for people who work in news desks, that doesn't quantify as a news story.
And there's no, and the other stuff has just been so defunded and under-resourced.
Right. The features desk doesn't exist anymore.
Right. So anyway.
No, and you mentioned and the Englewood Parade, the Billiken Parade you just mentioned. These are great examples of the kind of cohesion that really does exist in communities, in all Chicago communities, but especially in the African-American communities of the city. The Billiken Parade I know well because it was started by the Chicago Defender way back in the 1920s. But most people don't even know that. They just know it's the annual event that they go to the second Saturday of August on King Drive. This year was smaller. The budget was reduced. There was some controversy around it. There were still a couple hundred thousand people participating and being there without any incident that I know of.
Yeah. All right. So, Martha, what do you got for rabbit
hole
story?
Okay. My own personal rabbit hole story was the Nate Parker story,
mm-hmm.
Which is really depressing. Which is the story of the director of the Birth of a Nation, who, the movie was sold for tons and tons of money at Sundance. He's like the celebrated big thing. It's all supposed to be a huge groundbreaking, film that I was really excited to see. And I still want to see, but then all this news broke that he'd been, and it's been out in the world for a while, that he'd been accused of rape when he was in college. He was actually went to trial. It was acquitted. And then it came out this week that the woman who had been the victim in this situation had killed herself a couple years ago.
Yes.
So, and frankly, Nate Parker has not done a very good job in the...
Recently she killed herself, I
thought. 2012. Yeah. And the whole thing, this is my rabbit hole. Like I was reading all the testimony that was online from the trial and from the witness who was there. And it was really, it just really upset me.
That's the kind of stuff of divorcing yourself between the art and the artist and you really, it becoming much, much harder in this day and age.
And in this particular instance, it really speaks to this, because of who he is and what the film is, it really speaks to this, kind of the fundamental conundrum right now, which is like, which is the bigger problem in society? Is it racism or sexism? Or racism or misogyny?
Right.
And it's not like you should have to choose. We shouldn't have to choose.
Right.
But people do feel, if you're not going to throw down on one side or the other, then it really forces you to kind of dig in into this very yucky, messy intersectional area that's hard, man. It's
my
hard.
Rabbit hole story is similar, the Amy Schumer, Kurt Metzger.
Yes, that one too. Yeah.
A story that is really difficult about a comedian in New York who was kicked out of a theater because victims came forward about sexual misconduct, rape. And Kurt Metzger, who's a writer for Amy Schumer's show, defended this guy. I mean, he didn't even know him, supposedly, but he just offended and he just kind of threw out, what this lynch mob mentality we have now. It got so inflammatory. Everything was so riled up that they were going after Amy Schumer, saying, how could you hire this guy? Amy Schumer comes out, says he's a friend of mine, but, I don't condone his behavior. But it almost becomes a story that Amy Schumer made a mistake.
Right.
And she's on Charlie Rose talking about, she canceled her tour around her book because she didn't want to talk about it. And I felt it to be very interesting the way that somehow this the light shines on Amy Schumer, a woman, because she had a writer who said some nasty things on the internet. I mean, I have a little understanding of comedy and comic shops and writers' rooms. A lot of jerks in comedy. But I'm surprised that so many people have put it on
everywhere.
Amy Schumer. I thought that was strange that she's somehow accountable for this.
She somehow became the focus of people's outrage, even though she was at least three people removed from the actual incident. And
she had nothing to do with the incident, really.
Yeah.
Because she's the one with the name. I mean, she's...
Well, and we are the Nate Parker story also brings up the same thing, where we're in this situation where we've decided as a society that we want to talk about sexual violence in a new way. We want to deal with it. We want it to stop. But we're not exactly sure who's committing it and under what circumstances. So you have kind of confusing messages, I think, where you have the White House coming out with the Department of Education under mm-hmm. Arne Duncan, coming out with very strong rules and very strong statements, but still kind of leaving what's really sexual assault, a crime, in the domain of colleges and universities when it takes place among students. I find that very difficult to reconcile, frankly.
The only thing I could say about both of these cases that does raise it brings it back into the forefront. Here comes school is about to start again.
Yeah.
I've done a couple stories around sexual assault on campuses where, that is rampant problem that schools, all the way, the big schools, you saw it with Baylor and Kenneth Starr having to resign essentially because they did a terrible job of just cover up and lying as opposed to dealing with something. And it seems like, you know, maybe this is a good thing, even though I just in the case of Amy Schumer, I'm like, I don't understand how she became the ire of the internet over this thing. And it just perplexes me. I guess it's because she's a name. But otherwise, like, it's good that we're talking about it.
I could go there. It's because she's a woman.
Yeah.
But I don't. And people. Yeah. Okay, if I had one takeaway from. We were talking about the RNC earlier off the air. Mm-hmm. If I had one takeaway from my trip to the RNC, it was that people still want to code their racism, but they are totally fine with being sexist right out in the open. And that was not anything. It was a huge shock to me, but it was disturbing.
You know,
so,
and I agree. I think it's this strange.
She's
sexism.
A polarizing, outspoken,
yeah,
you know, brassy lady. People like to take those people down a peg.
I guess I'm just surprised that I can understand sexism on Twitter, and I can understand the way that it's kind of played out. I guess mainstream media asking her for quotes and putting in her position where she has to be a spokesperson for this, I felt was a little bit more over the line that I felt that that's where sexism reared its ugly head, where you're like, I get it, you want a quote from the famous person but she doesn't know any of this. It's not her theater. It has nothing to do with her.
Right. And I think it was, she was being held to a very odd standard, not just a high standard.
Yeah. All right. So let's wrap it up now. What story, all right, are we ready? This is the big question. What story are we going to remember from this week in 50 years, 100 years, 500 years? What's the story that made history?
Well, I'm going to go with a hypothetical because it occurred to me, what would history say if Donald Trump was elected president of the United States? And it occurred to me, like, I really like to read, this won't surprise people who know my nerdy interests, but I really like to read Roman history and like Byzantine history and stuff like that. So I remember reading one particular bit of Byzantine history written by John Julius Norwich, who's one of these old British historians who's like, you know, names, dates, you know, one or two details, next emperor, that kind of thing, right? And I remember just one mention of an Emperor Hugo, who the soldiers acclaimed, the Praetorian Guard acclaimed him to be the emperor, and it was a total disaster. The Turks contracted the empire by 50%. The economy shrank by more than that, and the empire was in stark decline for at least 300 years afterwards.
So you really took this question to heart. You're going 100, 300, 500.
That's right. So I thought, like, hundreds of years from now, people will read it and be like, wow, why did they do that? That was a terrible idea. So
Donald Trump's not wearing a toga. That's interesting. Yeah. Martha, what do you got?
All right. Well, I was going to go back to lead, because lead is going to still be an issue in human bodies and in the pipes of our cities in 50 years, if not 500 years. But I'm going to go with the Uber self-driving car, just so I can get my Uber story on
all
the
right,
air.
Quick.
Okay.
Do it.
So Uber announced that they're going to have a self-driving car.
Yep.
I was rear-ended by an Uber driver hit and run on Tuesday. Very, very mildly. Obviously, I'm fine.
Yeah,
I was, I
hit
got a
run.
Fat lip and I spilled coffee all over myself. And the Uber driver I pulled over and he kind of went around me and kept driving. And at the time, I was irritated and cursing a blue streak. But later on, when I actually tried to just sort of do something about it was when I got really, really angry.
Absolutely.
Because, and this is just my elevator pitch here. It's like lack of accountability is built into Uber's business model. There is actually no way for a member of the general public who has had an encounter with Uber, such as the one that I did, to file a complaint with them. You have to, their whole customer service is only set up for customers. You know, like you have to, literally I've been doing this for a week or 4 days at this point. And I can only imagine how that lack of accountability is going to play out when we have robots driving our cars.
That's a huge story beyond that, because I would say, in general, you're seeing more and more businesses move to that model. You and I will share stories off air. I've got my washer-dryer Sears repair, which is the same concept where they're like, it's Sears. No, it's not. There's nobody. Who's your boss? Right. Nobody's your boss. Like, you know, what is happening?
As we move towards era of increasing automation, who is the boss?
Who is liable?
Who is liable when the self-driving car rear-ends another driver?
Essentially, that's
on a public
future.
Road.
Yeah. My story is a positive one. It's an Olympic story. It's not going to be Ryan Lochte. I think that will not last more than a month. We'll be like, Ryan who? I think Usain Bolt, the sprinter from Jamaica, who won all the gold medals again this week. And he did it in a way that he hasn't caused controversy. He's I don't know. There's something about him that he's a low-profile celebrity, and he's fun. And I think in 100 years, you look back and say, who was the fastest runner that's ever lived? And I think Bolt will be, instead of what it used to be, Carl Lewis. You know, it used to be other people. But Bolt has surpassed that, and he's done it in a way that he's been respectful. There's a great video going around where he's giving an interview, and then someone's on the podium, and they're playing the national anthem for the Americans. And he stops the interview to yeah, there's just something about that in this day and age and this week when we saw bad behavior from athletes, to see one from one that is excelling, I think Bolt will be
remembered. He was on my short list of winners and also, actually.
He's literally
a winner. I mean.
And chemical enhancement free.
Yeah, right. So far.
Yeah.
Right. You got to put an asterisk next to everybody, right? Hey, Tom McKaylee, Martha Bain, thanks so much. It was so fun, you guys.
Awesome. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming. And you got to come back sometime. Come back anytime. In the fall.